Hello and welcome to a season wrap-up edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. My name is Nate Bucati, along, as always, with the one and only, last time I get to say it, I know you don't like it, but last time I get to say El Jefe for the calendar year of 2018, Carter Augustine. What's up, Carter? How are you, man?
Yeah, man. It's good to get this in. A little nostalgic over a really fun year and kind of sad to tie a bow on it, but also should be some fun, huh?
We basically needed a week to decompress and process. Sure. and go through the different stages of grief after Sporting KC season got cut a little bit shorter than we expected. Look, they still made it to the second-to-last step that you can make it. They made it to the conference final, but obviously that heartbreaking loss at home against the Portland Timbers is one that will leave a mark on all of us. And we're going to recap it a little bit, but I think we're going to spend a lot of today looking forward. And that's the one thing I take solace in, Carter, is sometimes you look at the incredibly short offseason that is MLS, particularly when you make a deep run in the playoffs and when you make Champions League the following year, and you could say, man, not much time to recover. But I don't know about you, I'm ready to look ahead because I don't want to spend a whole lot of time thinking about the way this last season ended. As great of a year as it was, the ending just it left us all, I think, in a bit of a tough place.
Sure. I'll agree and disagree just because I really enjoyed this season. And so as much as, like you said, a little bit of a disappointing taste because of how good this team was this year and how close they were to getting to MLS Cup. And you figure if they go down to Atlanta, they're going to give them a game. And that's how close they were to coming away with a championship this year. So there is a nice bit of that in terms of it's a quick offseason. The Drew Toluca in the Champions League, we'll talk about that later on. But it's something really fun to look forward to in a really short space of time. But for me, I don't feel like this is a disappointing year. I mean, maybe a disappointing end in that game and how they concede the wonder goal, and that changes the whole complex of that whole series. But still, a club record for goals, club record for away goals, just some really fun soccer to watch. I think overall it was a really successful season, and they're bringing back such a great core group of guys that I think this is kind of I don't know about you, it kind of feels like a platform for, almost like a new group, but like the start of something that could go a long ways, and I don't think this will be the last Western Conference final we'll see Sporting KC in the next couple of years. This group is so strong.
Okay, coming up on the show, we are going to hear from Graham Zusi, Seth Sinovic, Tim Melia, Roger Espinoza, Matt Beisler, about basically as they went and addressed the media in their exit interviews last week. You're going to hear that couple days after, still processing the loss, somber note that maybe we've had a little more time to recover from. But we're also going to hear them look forward to, like you said, the Champions League, which is coming up just in February. And I can't wait for this. I think it's going to be fantastic and fascinating to see this two-legged series against Toluca and the region of Toluca, too, which is 2,000 feet higher than Mexico City in elevation. The whole thing's going to be terrific, so we'll hear from them as well. We're also going to hear from Paul Tenorio. You're going to want to hear this interview. Paul Tenorio does as good of a job as anybody in the country at covering MLS, and there's a lot to cover. From league changes, there are always league changes, but rule changes, changes to the salary structures, changes to already a flurry of moves in the offseason with FC Cincinnati having their expansion draft, and some news coming out about Sporting Kansas City this offseason as well. So we'll break that all down with him. To get to your point, look, you're 100% right. This was an incredibly entertaining season for Sporting KC. And I'll take a moment to philosophize about what it means to be a sports fan. We all suffered the pain of that loss. I this time saw it through the eyes of my children, who I then immediately plastered on social media because that's what you do to your kids in 2018. But it delivered a message. They cared, and it actually meant a lot to me that they were that upset, because it meant that they were hooked. And one of the things that my son taught me after the season was that this loss, this whole journey of this season, actually made him a bigger Sporting Kansas City fan than the other way around. The heartbreak actually made him dig in more, because and it surprised me. I see the look on your face.
Interesting.
playing FIFA with his buddies. They always pick some of the big European clubs. Somebody wants to be Juventus so they can be Ronaldo. And the other day that happened, and he said, I'm being sporting. I don't care who you are. And he's never done that before. And there was almost like a defiance in his voice. Because now, man, he's got the scars. You know, the suffering almost draws you in closer in some ways than the euphoria of winning. And that hit me. But also, I had to talk with my kids that, hey, man, this is what you sign up for as a fan. There's only one team that walks away feeling satisfied at the very end of it.
Yeah.
And if that's the only time you can allow yourself to enjoy being a fan, you're going to be miserable almost all the time. And especially in a year like this, because you mentioned it. We were treated to exciting soccer, mm-hmm. attacking soccer, pretty soccer, the prettiest soccer that Sporting, I think, has ever played, the most attractive soccer they've ever played, thrilling finishes.
Great games,
personalities we could hold on to and embrace, a group of guys that seemed to like the fans as much as they liked each other and the fans in return. If you can't enjoy that, then what are you doing this for? That's all true. And in some ways, in a weird way, that makes the heartbreak even more so when they do lose, because you hurt for them.
Yeah.
You hurt because you know how good this team was. And that's why I think the disappointment is even better, because if you don't think your team's good enough and then they lose in the playoffs, you're frustrated because we weren't good enough.
Yeah.
This team, you know they were good enough to go all the way to the final, and maybe they would have been massive underdogs against Atlanta, but you know they would have given them a game. They've already proven that. And so that's why I think it hurts, is almost because it was such a good season.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we won't hear this from the clips that we're going to play from their exit interviews last week, kind of decompressing after their loss. But a couple of guys said that. I remember Aiko Parra actually said verbatim, you know, one of the things that hurts the most is, yeah, we really love doing this for the fans. We love, you know, playing for the coaches and the owners, and you know, that's why we do it. But this group of guys, he's like, we played for each other this year, and so it stings a little bit more because we talked about they're going to bring back the majority of the guys on this team, but there will be some guys that leave, and there'll be some new faces. They won't have this exact same team, and you're right, they were so good, and to hear them say that, we were pulling for each other, and so that kind of makes it a little bit tougher that they were good enough. They definitely were good enough and just came up short in the end. So, I can see that a little bit as well.
All right, so we put together, I'll say Carter put together some clips from the players when they addressed the media, when they came in for their exit interviews. This happened a week ago Monday. So the Monday following the loss at home against the Portland Timbers, you're going to hear from Matt Beisler, Graham Zusi, and Seth Sinovic right here.
It's nice to have your core group, and especially when you have such a short off season. Because before you know it, we're going to be back at it again, and hopefully we can start next year further along than we started this past season. But at the same time, you know, you don't want to get that false sense of security where you go into next season and just assume, all right, we have a lot of the same guys back. We're going to find success again next year. So we have to make sure we have the right mentality and make sure that we put the work in the off season. The team, you know, I would guess is going to look similar. But again, there's always changes. There's never a year where it's the exact same. And so there will be changes. There will be new players. There'll be players that leave. That's just the way that sports work. And whoever comes in, whoever leaves, it's our job to make sure everybody meshes and get everybody acclimated as quickly as possible.
I think a positive is, you know, we had a lot of new faces in this group, and a lot of times it takes time for those guys to understand the league and to get through tough times, and this group was able to do that at a, you know, incredible pace. You know, they didn't take any time to adjust to the league, and I think that's something that we can grow on, and those guys who came into the team are going to have so much more experience and be even better for us next year. So that's something exciting that we can look forward to.
Yeah, well, it's tough because, you know, I think this is the most talented team that I've been a part of since I've been here. But the league's also getting a lot better as well. So, it's a special group. It really is. We've got a lot of good players. I think with another year under the belt for some of the guys that haven't been here as long, I think that's only going to make it better going forward. Yeah, I think just knowing that how close we were, knowing that I don't think anybody in the locker room would say that I think we all feel like we deserve to be in the final. Not to take anything away from Portland or anything like that. We feel like as a team we're good enough to be in the final this year. So I think that's a motivating factor in itself, knowing how strong of a team we have, knowing how close we were, and the fact that the majority of the guys are coming back, and I think we'll be confident that we can make another run at it.
I like the way that finished with Seth Sinovic looking forward. And I think that's maybe the part that you take the most solace in, isn't it, Carter? And maybe we tie this back to the era of 2011, 2012, 2013. Those Sporting Kansas City teams, they had to suffer a couple of heartbreaks in the playoffs, but those heartbreaks almost led to them getting over the hump for MLS Cup. You hope that's kind of maybe the start of something like that again this time around.
Yeah, I think Peter Vermees has talked about that a little bit here in the offseason, and Daniel Sperry, one of the writers for Sporting KC, that covers Sporting KC, was talking about that throughout the exit interviews, asking the guys, you know, are there similarities here to 2012 where you're right on the precipice then, and you're going to be returning the core group of guys. And so I think you maybe can draw some similarities there. I just think this is the most talented team that they've had, and they did a good job in the middle of the season locking up those four guys to mm-hmm. keep them around for a little while longer. And there was the four or five years of losing in the knockout rounds, and I can't see that this team doing that anymore. I really feel like this team is built for a long haul. A lot of really good chances year after year of trying to make it to MLS Cup. I think they're returning so many key players.
And they actually have some salary cap space to try to add some more to it as well, which is going to be really interesting to see.
And then the young guys. I mean, you have to figure that Shallowy's going to get better, Busio's going to get better, maybe work his way into a few more games.
Kuzain, Lindsay.
Yeah, and so you feel like those guys will start making a little bit more of an impact as well. Yeah, I just feel as tough it was for the team to miss out on MLS Cup this year, I do feel like, there's so much that they're bringing back.
All right, we're going to look ahead to all that. Paul Tenorio is going to join us next, right on the other side of the break here. This is the Sporting Kansas City Show. And this season wrap-up edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show continues as Nate Bucchetti, Carter Augustine with you, as we just got done hearing from some of the Sporting Kansas City players. It's time to dive right into the madness that is the very brief offseason in the world of MLS, and nobody better to help us try to make sense of it all than our man Paul Tenorio. You should, if you're not already, follow him on Twitter, at Paul Tenorio. That's PaulTenorio. And you should also subscribe to The Athletic, because that's where you can read all of his fantastic MLS coverage. I've been a subscriber of The Athletic, Carter, for a while, and I don't know, it was earlier in the season when they started adding more soccer coverage to that already terrific website, and it just took it to 11. I mean, their soccer coverage has been great.
And Paul is one of the very best, and you're right, they keep ramping it up. And Paul, thanks for joining us, first of all. And second, maybe you can elaborate. You guys had an SKC writer towards the end of the year, and it sounds like there's plans for a little more sporting coverage at The Athletic next year, I think, as well. Is that right?
Absolutely. We are working hard to continue to expand our coverage, and not just the depth of our coverage, but also, also the number of writers that we're bringing into local markets. So I think Kansas City for us, as you said, and as you saw towards the end of the year, it was a market that we recognized that we needed to focus more on. We still recognize that. We hope we find the right voice, the right writer to go in there and give SKC the coverage it deserves, because it's got an awesome fan base and I think a fan base that deserves local coverage on a more regular basis.
You know, I think The Athletic is forcing some of the old traditional media to keep up a little bit or catch up, because I think that's been one of the frustrations for a lot of MLS fans is the lack of traditional media coverage. And I'm not sliding any of the guys that do really hard work for some of the traditional media out there, but I think The Athletic's taken it up a notch and given it the serious coverage that it deserves. And good gosh, Paul, there's so much news in the world of MLS to cover. There's certainly no shortage of that. So let's dive right in. And I want to start by just addressing MLS Cup a little bit. There's a few things to take away from it. Of course, we know Atlanta won. The game itself was maybe not the most compelling ever. But to me, what is compelling is what it means. What Atlanta United and this phenomenon of what they're calling MLS 3.0 means. TV ratings were up 91% from last year's Cup to this one. Obviously, the spending that's been done by Atlanta has been game-changing, and the attendance at these games in Atlanta has been completely game-changing. I know you wrote a piece about maybe what some of the owners feel this means. Maybe can you just contextualize for us? What were your biggest takeaways in terms of what this year's MLS Cup, specifically involving Atlanta, means for the next iteration of MLS?
Well, first, just quickly going back to the last thing, I'd like to note, I think Sam McDowell does a fantastic job in the Kansas City market.
No, so we don't want to give him credit.
give him some props to Sam. Looping back to the league, though, look, I thought it was, you know how it is. I go into these games with no rooting interest, but I do think it was important in a way from a bigger picture perspective for Atlanta to win, because as I was reporting that piece where I was talking to different owners and I was talking to Commissioner Don Garber, you know, a lot of what I was hearing is that there's not this great amount of evidence that spending more leads to better results. And simply because it hasn't been happening long enough. And my counter argument was, well, if you just look at the last few years of Major League Soccer and you see the teams that are winning MLS Cup, Seattle, Toronto, Atlanta, it's not a coincidence that those are three of the highest spending teams in MLS. But even if you move the results to the side for a second and you look at the other areas that drive business and that drive revenue, that's where I think the owners should be paying the most amount of attention. So when you talk about the TV ratings increasing for MLS Cup, when you talk about 73,000 plus in the stands at Mercedes-Benz, when you talk about the amount of gear that Atlanta United has been selling, the fact that they average more than 53,000 fans a game and the revenue they brought in from tickets, all of those things should matter when owners look at how Atlanta has approached the business model to say, yes, you have to invest in order to get back revenue and in order to grow. And that's not just about players. It's not just about $15 million for Barco or $8.5 million plus salary for Almirón or those numbers that we see so much more often. It's about the same number of things that some of the things you're seeing in Kansas City as well, investing in the training facility, investing in the stadium, investing in the scouting infrastructure. If you do all of those things and committing to invest in the academy, it's not about investing in one or the other. It's investing holistically. And I think that's what Atlanta has done so well since they came into the league. They've outspent on the field, but they're spending at the very top across every other category. And this is the result. And I think you're going to see Atlanta in the driver's seat in this league for many, many years to come. And the only teams that are really going to be able to compete in the big picture are going to be the teams that are spending in those areas consistently.
You know, and I think it's interesting too, Paul, because I think Kansas City changed the paradigm when they built the stadium here. People thought it was crazy to put that much money into a soccer-specific stadium. And the rest of the league started to follow suit because they envisioned what these packed stadiums could look like. But all of a sudden, you're going from, you know, places like Kansas City where they get 20,000 fans, you know, to 70,000 fans for some of these games in Atlanta. Makes it a little easier to invest too when you're turning out that type of ticket revenue and parking revenue that Atlanta is. I think some people in a market like Kansas City will become fearful that, okay, in sports like baseball, the revenue disparity becomes so great that it's hard to be, you're not playing on an even field. Whereas in the NFL, a team that's in a small market like the Chiefs can still compete. How do you feel that's evolving as MLS evolves in terms of, yes, you want to increase the spending, but should there be any fear for people here, like in a small market like Kansas City, that that they won't be able to financially compete just simply because the numbers aren't in this market? How is the league addressing those situations in your eyes going forward?
Well, the league's constantly addressing it to protect small market teams more than they're addressing it to help the big market teams. I mean, just the fact that the discussion was recently had to eliminate a DP spot, or sorry, the league doesn't like to use the word eliminate, because they were going to change the structure of that third DP spot to essentially be another TAM player. That discussion's not being done to help Atlanta or Toronto or Seattle or NYCFC. That's being done to help Kansas City and Salt Lake and Philadelphia. And it's frustrating for me because, you know, I do think the league is at a point where it's going to have to grow. And how it grows is going to be important, not just that it grows. And so when you look at the work that's being done around the league to build up the infrastructure, that was done with a purpose. Expansion was done with a purpose. The league wanted a greater footprint across the United States, and they wanted a permanence in those markets. That's why you're seeing the soccer-specific stadiums. That's why you're seeing the training facilities. They now have the infrastructure that matches professional leagues in any other country or in any other sport in this country. So there's a permanence now, there's a footprint now that has prepared this league for that next step of growth. And that next step of growth is going to be an investment in players. So how do you maintain a fair level of investment? Well, I don't think today's MLS allows for that any more than tomorrow's MLS will. As long as there are areas of discretionary spending, there are going to be owners who are willing to spend more. So the question has to become, where are you spending your money and how are you spending it? That's always going to be the equalizer. Do I think there will be a luxury tax like in baseball that kind of pretends to band-aid over the Yankees spending way more than the Royals? Maybe. But we've seen in baseball that doesn't really work. It just makes the owners feel better about it, the small market owners, maybe give them some extra cash. But it's really not that much money. When you look at, you know, for example, if the Nationals went and spent on Bryce Harper, you know, the cost per year for it would be like $1.5 million of luxury tax. It's nothing. It's not going to help anyone. So, you know, from my perspective, it's about how do you maximize your dollars. And I do think there's also a level of there are going to be some owners in this league who, frankly, cannot keep up. And that's the natural growth of Major League Soccer. There are always going to be big markets and small markets and big spenders and low spenders. That's the nature of sports, no matter what league you look at. It's going to be about commitment. I don't think that there's a way to change the rules unless you change the rules to hurt the big market owners that are willing to spend more. There's not really a way to boost the small market owners other than to give them mechanisms that allow them to maximize resources, which soccer has better than any other sport in the world. They have academies. And if you invest right there and you do it right there, then you should be able to create your own ecosystem that drives player spending in other areas of the roster.
Well, it's really nice and fun to talk about the big picture of MLS, especially reflecting on Atlanta winning this MLS Cup. And I think we all agree we're in a good state here moving forward. Paul, what about the short term, the turnaround, the quick turnaround to the 2019 season? What big changes are there going to be in MLS next year, maybe from a rules perspective or from roster mechanisms? Have you heard anything in terms of big changes for the league next year?
The thing I'm keeping my eye on most is that third DP spot. What ends up happening in those discussions behind the scenes at the Board of Governors meetings within the different groups that are making those decisions? I don't think there will be major change. I think that the league is recognizing, and I think there are a group of owners that are saying, This isn't smart. This doesn't work for us. It doesn't move the league forward. I do think we'll see continued investment. I do think you'll see targeted allocation money continue to go up. That's only natural, right? Because every contract you sign is going to increase over time. And so teams are going to need more targeted allocation money to be able to buy those contracts down. So the question is just how much targeted allocation money will rise. I don't think we'll see major changes in 2019, if only because the CBA comes up at the end of the season in January of 2020. So that in itself is going to bring some major changes to the league. So I'm not expecting anything, you know, that's going to rock the MLS world in this offseason, because I do think that that's going to be saved for a year down the line.
Are you hearing any rumblings? We've heard some rumors, read some rumors about a change in the scheduling format a little bit, in the playoff format, and in maybe trying to shorten the actual calendar length of the season up. Do you think that could take place this year?
Absolutely, yes. I do think that will happen. How many of those changes will happen, I think, is still up for discussion. Whether the league season starts in February, I think, is still being discussed. They have to figure out the dynamics of, you know, teams like Minnesota and Chicago, where, how many games on the road would they open their season if we're starting in February? But you already see the impact if you look at the offseason calendar. The combine has moved up a week earlier than normal. Training camps, preseason camps will start a week earlier than usual. The league is preparing to start in February. How early in February, I'm not sure. The playoff structure will change. And I think we will see the field expand as well in preparation for further expansion. So what does that mean? It means going to single elimination games. It means rewarding teams who finish higher in the regular season by giving them home games throughout if you're the one seed. But, yeah, it does make the postseason shorter. So I think it does, in a way, it makes MLS Cup, the percentage of games you need to win MLS Cup versus the length of a regular season, the dynamic there changes significantly. So, you know, whether you're a fan of it or not, I think will depend on how easy or difficult you want the road to be to win MLS Cup. But I think the most interesting thing for me is going to be if this is implemented in 2019, how do you start to measure the length of the offseason? How do you start to make sure teams are prepared where if you don't make the playoffs, you're finishing in mid-October, and if you make it all the way to MLS Cup, you're finishing in mid-November, and then you don't start playing until mid-February. That's still a big concern for MLS teams. You know, to go 4 months between games for the teams that don't make the playoffs, I think is a little bit problematic. So that'll be the next step, I think. The first step is, hey, let's fix the schedule. Let's try to get this season ended a little bit earlier. The next step has to be, what are we doing to make sure our players are getting the training and getting the games that they need? And I think that'll loop back around to those CBA discussions.
Yeah, that'll be really interesting, the schedule changes, I think, to watch next year. And you talked about a little bit with the expansion. I think that's another big change, obviously, coming in next year, FC Cincinnati. Had the expansion draft yesterday. Sporting KC fans were happy to not have a player selected for the first time because they were ruled out. And what are you seeing from FC Cincinnati, and what do you think their impact will be in their first year?
Look, first of all, I think Peter Vermees might have offered up a few players to be taken in the expansion draft for the 50K if this guy's, you know, you're already moving on from. But
Mark Dos Santos up in Vancouver.
That's right. He learned well in his time in Kansas City. I think Cincinnati is going to be interesting. I'm a little bit pessimistic about Cincinnati, if I'm being honest. I think they've got a great market. They've done well. But they're taking a strategy that we saw before in Minnesota. And while they've done a little bit more prep work than Minnesota did, so I don't want to make a direct comparison. You know, they went and got Adi during the season. They went and got Fatai Alache. They signed some players to their USL team with the intention on bringing them up to MLS. In fact, they signed those players to two-year contracts with an MLS guarantee on them. I do think that they are undervaluing the jump between USL and NASL and MLS. And once you start to undervalue the gap that exists right now between those leagues, the level of play, what's needed to be a consistent starter, what's needed to be a helpful depth player, you start to put yourself in some trouble. So when I look at that, and then when I looked at what they did in the expansion draft yesterday, the big numbers they were willing to take on for guys who, you know, are clearly overpaid, if they are not able to negotiate those numbers down for a guy like Darren Maddox or Lamar, I think it's problematic when you start to look at the roster. You know, they've spent more than $2 million in allocation money already on the Adi and Waston trades and the Garza trade. So it's not as though they've got their full basket of resources at their disposal to go and add pieces, and they're starting to run out of roster room. So what's going to happen in Cincinnati? I don't know. I think it'll be an interesting experiment to see. Maybe am I, as a national soccer writer, underrating the top USL players, or is my projection and my experience of watching Orlando City up close, watching Minnesota the last couple of years, is that going to bear out? And is Cincinnati maybe going to have found itself in that same type of trouble? I lean towards the latter, but that's patting myself on the back a little bit much, so we'll see what happens.
Paul Tenorio once again is our guest, and like I said, we could spend over an hour talking about all these different things. There's already been a slew of activity in the off season in MLS, and once again, you need to just subscribe to The Athletic. You can get all of his coverage there. Follow him on Twitter as well, at Paul Tenorio. I want to ask you two last questions that relate to Sporting Kansas City, Paul. And one is, we saw a report that came out that that Ike Opara has reportedly told Peter Vermes that he would like for him to explore any trade opportunities that are out there. Peter Vermes was quoted as saying that, look, we're not gonna do anything unless it's something that makes sense for us. And basically, it came down to money. I think this ties in a little bit, by the way, to what we were talking about with target allocation money. I'm wondering if this is setting up for a pretty big fight with the Players Association. I'm sensing some animosity or resentment from these American players, these domestic players, that are seeing all this money being paid on foreign players with target allocation money, and they want their piece of the pie. So I guess that one's a two-part question. Is that what we've seen from Ike, an indicator of a fight brewing there? And just in overall, what do you think of Ike maybe turning in that that trade request, and how does Sporting Kansas City deal with that?
Absolutely. I think that there are concerns amongst the American players about who's getting paid how much, and that the fact that it's very obvious that TAM is trending heavily toward signing international players. Players should be concerned in the short term. I get it. You have a short career to make as much money as you possibly can, and you should advocate to make that money. That being said, I think that TAM has been successful in elevating the level of the league, and I think it's largely done so by bringing in international players. And I think as this league continues to get older and grow and mature, the impact of TAM, that web is only going to spread. We're going to see homegrown players improving because they're training in environments that are better. We're going to see the American players improving and demanding more of those contracts. Ike Opara is a good example. He's played very, very well. He deserves a raise. He got one last year. Maybe not as much as he would like in retrospect. We're seeing it especially with central defenders, because what's happened is the league, there are teams that have done a very poor job of bringing in TAM-level center backs who have been outperformed by domestic center backs in MLS. So, you know, Walker Zimmerman, Tim Parker, and now Ike Opara are all guys who want to get paid at the same level as some of those higher-paid center backs. In this case, with Sporting Kansas City, there's a higher-paid center back on the roster. And so that is a problem and something that general managers are going to have to worry about. But at the same time, I think you have a responsibility as the general manager of LAFC, for example, or the New York Red Bulls, to say, I'm not going to pay a premium and I'm not going to pay a price because somebody else messed up. And it's the same argument by which, a team could say, I'm not going to pay a premium for a forward just because Orlando City was willing to pay $1.6 million for Don Dwyer. That can't always set the precedent. You still have to hold firm to your beliefs and your values. That being said, coming back and looping around to the Ike Opara situation, Kansas City has a difficult decision to make in that it has to choose whether or not it believes that Ike Opara is going to be the starter next year, or whether we see Fontas or another player step into that starting role. If you believe that Ike is going to be your guy, then you're going to have to figure that out internally by probably coming to terms on a new contract. But we've seen in the history of Sporting Kansas City a willingness by Peter Vermes to move a player for assets if it's at the right price, and to understand when sometimes you have to send a player off maybe a little earlier than you'd like, but it's better than holding on to them a couple years too long. I expect I don't know what to expect Peter Vermes to do, but I do expect there to be a healthy market for Ike Opara and Major League Soccer, because it is difficult to buy a center back where you know what you're going to get and you know what you're getting out of Ike Opara. So I do think Peter Vermes will have multiple choices to make between, do I re-sign this player or do I look at the very best offer out there in MLS? And like I said, I think there's a precedent in Kansas City for what Peter Vermes will do if the right offer comes along.
Final question for me, at least, Paul. This to me also ties into heavily what we talked about at the beginning in terms of how the smaller market teams compete. I don't think there's much of a question that Sporting Kansas City, with their investment in their academy system and bringing along players from other areas outside of Kansas City, like Shallowy, like Jalen Lindsay, like Gianluca Abusio, this homegrown territory situation, is that going to go away? Will Sporting Kansas City at some point be able to, say, go into Los Angeles or Texas and convince a young player to come play for them within the rules of MLS? I personally feel like that would be a huge benefit because Sporting has the ability to sell themselves on that. Do you see that coming down the road here in the near future?
I don't know, because I had multiple general managers tell me this is going to happen. It's only a matter of when. There is support across the league for it to occur. I had two general managers who I know are on the other side of this issue text me the day that article came out that I wrote saying that they were considering this, saying this is not going to happen. We will make sure that this does not happen. So there is a split. You know, I do think the split leans toward removing the homegrown territories, but there are teams who very strongly do not think that is best for the league and are going to fight this hard behind the scenes. What does that mean? It probably means that it's going to happen. It probably means it's not going to happen this offseason. How long it'll take, I'm not sure, but I think we've got some time before that debate, before there's a winner to that debate behind the scenes.
Am I right that would help Sporting? I've never asked anybody in the organization about it.
I think so.
I mean, right?
Absolutely. I think it would help Sporting. I think they're ahead of the game already in the resources that they put into scouting across the country. And I think also in the facilities that they have and the precedent that they have of playing young players. So you have that's what the training facility, what Pinnacle does for a team like Sporting Kansas City, is if you take a kid out of Chicago, and if that kid goes and visits Toyota Park in the one training field behind the stadium and sees that, and sees that there's a lack of history of playing homegrowns, and then Sporting Kansas City puts that kid on a plane and flies him down to Kansas City and shows them the Pinnacle training facility, sits them down with Lucio, sits them down with Jalen Lindsay, sits them down with Shiloh to talk about their experiences, to show them the minutes that those kids are playing at a very young age. Yeah, it gives Sporting Kansas City a big advantage. And I think that's why teams like Sporting Kansas City are pushing to make it happen, because it would be a good thing for the teams who are spending right and spending smart in those areas. And I think Kansas City would be one of the teams that benefits most in MLS.
Let's go. Let's get it done. Let's not punish these kids because they're born in a area where the organization doesn't invest in the youth. Let's let them go where they want to go and play. Not that I'm biased or anything, Paul. I will say this. You forced me reluctantly to acknowledge that Sam McDowell does a really good job covering Sporting Kansas City. I had to do that through gritted teeth, but it's actually a fair point and true. But I stand by my statement that everybody should also subscribe to The Athletic because you guys do great work. Thanks for giving us so much of your time today, Paul. Hopefully we can talk to you again here as we get ready for next season, which is right around the corner.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
All right, that is Paul Tenorio. We'll take a break back to look ahead to the Champions League for Sporting KC, which is just a couple of months away, right after this. All right, back to wrap things up on this final edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show for 2018. Nate Bucati along with Carter Augustine. Our thanks to Paul Tenorio for joining us. What a fantastic conversation that was. We're going to have him on more often and maybe going into next season because it's going to be a really busy off season in a short period of time. Yeah. Waiting for the schedule to come out, Carter?
Yeah, it's it's going to be a fun one. Waiting for that schedule. And I feel like they're always the last ones with the schedule. They're going to have to be on a little bit more on top of it this year.
Yeah, that's a point of frustration for me. You know, you ought to know what the schedule is going to be before the season's over. You ought to know next year's schedule, at least in terms of the dates of the games, but yeah. We don't have that yet, so we will wait. We do know a few things, though. I'll give you some of the information that we know for right now. And the most important of that is we know that Sporting Kansas City will be in the CONCACAF Champions League, and we know who they're going to play. They're going to play Toluca, one of the best teams in Liga MX. They will play at home first, and then they will take on Toluca in Toluca, which is just to the west of Mexico City, but up about 2,000 feet mm-hmm. in elevation. We think the first game is going to be somewhere around February 21st, and then the return game down at Toluca around February 27th. The Sporting KC players are expected to be back in camp for their physicals January 12th. That's a month from the day that we are taping this podcast right now. We're doing this on December 12th. The players don't have much time to rest and recover and get ready And they're going to be right back at it, Carter.
Yep. How quick is that? And as we just heard from Paul Tenorio, it's pushed up even more this year with the schedule change in MLS. But for Sporting, they got the early start with Champions League. And this offseason is so short. It's the shortest in North American professional sports. So hopefully they get a nice little vacay, a chance to decompress a little bit. But as we talked about, kind of a nice for the fans to get right back at it. But it's so difficult for MLS teams in this competition to face Mexican teams who will be in the middle of their season. So that's going to be something that Sporting's going to have to deal with. It's going to be a really tough one. But I'm excited. I don't know about you, about this new format. It's going straight to the knockouts, Sporting KC home and home with Toluca.
Absolutely. You know, in the last time around, Sporting Kansas City was playing in the group stages. You're going to places like Costa Rica. You're going to places like Central America in the middle of your season to play these games, and it didn't turn out well for Sporting KC the last time around. I love this. Jump into it. We saw the United States MLS teams, well, even and the Canadian MLS teams, because obviously Toronto was very close to winning the first CCL title for an MLS team. They seem to thrive off of that new format a little bit better this time around. But you're right, it's going to be a challenge because these Liga MX teams, look, they have two seasons in Liga MX, the Clausura and the Apertura, but they're in the middle of one of those, and so it does make it a little bit more of a challenge. But I think it's great, man. I for some reason, it's got me more excited this time around. Maybe when Sporting got to take on Cruz Azul when they got to the knockout rounds a couple years ago, but I feel like the roster is so much deeper and more equipped to compete with a Mexican team this time around than they were back then.
Oh, yeah, definitely. The roster's way deeper, so I think that should help. But then you've got guys with international experience in international club competitions, like Felipe Gutierrez, Diego Rubio. These guys played in those type of tournaments down in South America. Mm-hmm. You're going to add Johnny Russell, who I'm not sure if he ever went through Europe, but at least would have been through some cup competitions in and around Scotland and England.
And he's playing in the UEFA Nations League for his national team, so he gets a little bit of that. He's playing at that level.
Yep. So I think, you've got Andreu Fontas, who's got Champions League experience, and he wasn't a starter this year. So, I think it is a much better equipped team to deal with this Champions League, and maybe a little bit of a bitter taste as well. They didn't do as well as they would have liked the last time they were actually in this competition. So, you know, there's so many of those core group of guys that are still with the team. So maybe a little bit of added fire to it there. But still that opportunity to be the first MLS team to lift the Champions League in its current format. And I gotta think that's got to be such a huge motivational factor for any of these MLS competitors. You know what I mean? Like, these guys are – that you can write your name in the history books. And so I think that's a really cool aspect still. Toronto's so close, but they weren't able to get over the line.
And then it seemed to devastate their MLS campaign
as
well.
Yeah, so that's something to keep in mind. If they make a run, and that could have some effects on the early start of the MLS season.
I will point out, though, on the flip side of that, New York Red Bulls made a pretty darn good run in Champions League last year as well, and then they went on to set the MLS record for points in a regular season and win the Supporters' Shield. So it can be done. Obviously, the injury bug can be a problem too. I think that, you know, Toronto was dealing with two straight years of making it to MLS Cup Final, a bunch of injuries that they suffered during that stretch as well, and it all just kind of fell apart on them. Mm-hmm. Let's look to the New York Red Bulls and say that's the way Sporting Kansas City want to do it.
I think so.
Just take the next step and actually win the Champions League as well. Let's hear what some of the Sporting Kansas City players have to say about it. You're going to hear from Tim Melia, Seth Sinovic, and Roger Espinoza on the prospect of playing in the Champions League just a couple of months away.
I think it's something everyone's excited about. I mean, after a tough result like we just faced, I think the first thing you want to do is get back out on the field, and now we're going to have the opportunity to get back out there a month early.
I think it's the same as any competition that we're in, and I think Peter would tell you the same thing. Every game that we play, we go out there and try to win it. So Champions League is going to be no different. I think we're a little disappointed with our last showing a couple years ago in Champions League, and I think we'll want to right that this year.
But, yeah, I mean, you got to get back to work right away. You know, every time you finish a season like that, you honestly, you can't wait to come back and, you know, and try to do better than what you did the season before. I mean, last time we didn't do well in the Champions League, so it's always something in the back of your mind that you want to get back to it and try to do it again and do better.
There you hear Roger Espinoza saying exactly what you mentioned, Carter, that bad taste in their mouth of the way they performed the last time around in the Champions League. This team's always ambitious, but I think they're going to be very motivated to be ready for the Champions League coming up in February.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the way that this season ended as well, those are two really big motivational factors. It's tough for them to get up for it in February. I think it might be tough for some fans as well, but I hope that it's a big crowd in February for this game. I think some fans will be eager to see a few more goals with how well this season went. So I think it will be a good crowd. And how about that trip down to the border of Mexico City in February? That doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. I mean, the altitude is one thing, but I'll tell you what, we can talk about altitude affecting Sporting KC, but how is playing in February in Kansas City going to affect a team from just outside of Mexico City as well?
Yeah.
So I think
that should have an effect on on a team that's – I'm looking at their roster, and it's all South Americans and Mexican guys. So I would think that could have a bit of a factor as well.
Might be a little chilly in Kansas City at that time.
Might be a little cold.
So it's going to be fun. But that's the type of stuff that I think makes it for a fascinating competition and one that I'm – incredibly excited about now that I think MLS has gotten to a point where they can actually go toe-to-toe with a lot of these teams. Yeah. That just really changes it to me. All right, that's going to do it for us. Carter, you're expected to be in top physical condition by January 12th. That's when physicals take place. So you got yourself about a month to get ready. You know, not too much of that holiday ham over Christmas, because we need you ready here just a couple of weeks after that.
I don't know if I'm ready for January 2020. That's a little too soon.
It's going to be there. Happy holidays to you, buddy. It's
you
been
too,
a
man.
Great season. A lot of fun.
A lot of fun. Thanks for everyone for listening as well.
Yeah, that's right. We thank you for listening all season long, and we plan to be back. We got some new plans for you, possibly, for the SKC show next season as well. It's going to be great. We'll see you next season. It's right around the corner. Happy holidays, everybody, from the Sporting Kansas City show.